We've been talking about drought in the region since the Christmas decorations came down, basically. It was late January when California's governor declared a drought. Things were scarcely better across the state line where, for example, the Mount Ashland ski area never got enough snow to open for a single day. Given that lack of water, you might have thought the growing season would have been lousy, and in some areas and for some crops, it certainly was. For Oregon vineyards growing wine grapes, it's a different story, a very different story when you take the whole state into account. Dr. Greg Jones is a climatologist at Southern Oregon University with an emphasis on the wine industry and our guest in the studio today. Dr. Jones, good to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the easy stuff, the difference between a meteorologist and a climatologist.
It's the here and now versus the long term. Meteorologists really are looking at kind of what happens day to day, and climatologists kind of tend to summarize that over the long term. But you can't be a meteorologist without knowing climate and be a climatologist without knowing meteorology.
So you've always focused on viticulture, I noticed. Mm-hmm. And so what was the attraction for you?
Well, you know, I was very interested in hydrology originally, and I took a class in climate studies, and this guy, the professor I had, was a agricultural climatologist, and he piqued my interest on how and why climate influenced growing crops throughout the world. And then when I started looking at specific crops to study, rice and corn and soybeans didn't appear quite so interesting. And I came upon wine as a great study system because it has so much art and history and culture and economics and all kinds of things tied into it. And so it allowed me to look at a really big palette of issues that were out there.
Palette, so to speak.
Yeah.
You work that in. I hadn't even thought about it in those terms before, though, the deep history of wine. I mean, mm-hmm. The fact is you go back into cultures thousands of years before ours, and there's a celebration of wine. There's Bacchus, the Greek god of wine,
sure. All
that stuff.
No, there's lots of history there. Matter of fact, one of the Bordeaux vineyards, Haubrion, they just found the first documentation of it, them selling fruit and wine back to 1521.
Really?
Yeah.
Your dissertation focused on Bordeaux, didn't it?
Yes. I was at the University of Virginia, but I did all my work in Bordeaux.
Mm-hmm. Was it just a no-brainer because it's such a great wine
region?
Well,
it was kind of a no-brainer because I thought that people hadn't studied Bordeaux viticulture and wine production the way a climatologist could. Plus, there was a lot of data there. It was a lot of long history, so I had a lot of data to work with.
Which then gives you a chance to go back and look and see what changes resulted in what in the vintage?
Sure. And then you can also, the more data you have, the more strongly you feel about your results because you have a large data set to work with.
All right. So the data set for this year, for Oregon in particular, looks quite good, surprisingly good, I think, for people like myself who are not steeped in the business here. But, I mean, you would have thought, okay, this is a lousy, hot year and very little water, so perhaps it would have been a bad year for wine grapes, but apparently not.
No, wine grapes do very well when you have a relatively dry climate and low precipitation during the growing season. We just happen to have all the right conditions occur this year. Fortunately, there was enough water available for places that use irrigation for viticulture in Oregon. California was another story. Irrigation was cut off quite early for many places. And so I think from a quality perspective, we're going to see good wine probably made throughout the entire western U.S. The challenge for some places, California's crop looks to be about 10 to 15% down just basically because they didn't have the irrigation to grow a bigger crop. While parts of Oregon likely will be a bumper crop, and there's already been reports out of Washington that it'll be their biggest year ever.
Which still sort of surprises. I mean, so the dry really doesn't hurt, and the super hot doesn't really hurt you? I mean, because July in particular in the Medford area set a record.
Yeah, and it's important to talk about in terms of what happened to those temperatures. You know, this year will probably go down as the warmest growing season on record throughout the western U.S., California, Oregon, Washington, all the way through, and even Idaho. But the issue is that we really didn't see it in the maximum temperatures during the daytime. We saw it much more in the minimum temperatures. As a matter of fact, the July and August temperatures in Oregon at night set their warmest record ever recorded over 122 years.
So the highest lows, in essence. Yeah.
Yeah, which is a little different story. Heat stress during the day can be problematic for grapes. It tends to shut down the vine a little bit and cause them to have some uneven ripening sometimes. But warming at night has a tendency to increase metabolism in the evening and through respiration. And you can actually have a greater ripening from that kind of condition.
Hmm. So the warm evenings helps, where the really super warm days don't necessarily.
Yeah, they can be detrimental. It just depends on how many you have and kind of when they occur during the growth cycle. And much of the warmer nighttime temperatures that we've had this year come from the Pacific Ocean in the North Pacific being much warmer than it's been in maybe about the past 10 years. So when you have warmer ocean waters, 1-2 degrees warmer, the warmer water produces more humidity in the atmosphere. When you have more humidity in the atmosphere, the nighttime temperatures can't go as low.
Oh, okay. So the ocean itself plays a huge part
of this. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Greg Jones is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a climatologist with a focus on the wine industry, and talking about how good the wine crop seems to be, particularly on the Oregon side. Join us on the Exchange if you'd like to take part in the conversation. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org, or check us out on Facebook. We took a picture of Greg for for posterity just a few moments ago. Really good bumper crop on the Oregon side. Hot weather didn't hurt it. Any areas in particular get even better production? Does it get better as you go further north?
No, I think it's the signal right now that I'm getting from growers is that it's been very good throughout the state. Most people are either harvested or pretty close to being done. You know, typically in Oregon, the harvest can carry through the whole month of October. And this year was extremely early. There were some very early crops that came off right near the 1st of September, and many places are done. And so it's been early. It looks like the crop is relatively large in terms of volume, and a lot of people are just saying the quality is wonderful.
Now, you said California looks to be probably 10 to 15% down. Mm-hmm. So is Oregon up by a similar
number? Yeah, and that's the numbers I'm hearing. We won't know until we get some census data in, but it looks like we're going to be about 10, 15% up.
So if the trends continue, though, I mean, does this end up being a lucky year? And if the weather patterns continue as they have, I mean, is it likely to continue like this? I mean, will the Oregon vineyards continue to produce as well?
Well, the drought is a real concern. Right now, the probability of us having what's called a mega drought in the western United States has gone up to about 35-40%. And California, and especially the desert Southwest, has gone through mega droughts in history. And we know that they definitely occur. And this one is problematic because of the number of people, of course, and the dependency on water. And so if California has really been in about a 3-year period of a drought, and we kind of have too. It's just that we've had a little bit more than they have. But if we don't get much this winter, Oregon could go into the same kind of drought scenario.
The term mega drought, I know we saw the study that came out, I think, last winter about that California has gone through periods where droughts lasted 200 years.
Yeah.
Is this what we're talking about?
Yeah. There's many places in the world, including California, that have these kind of mega drought signatures. And we think that the frequency and how long they last has tended to be fairly prominent, where you can have a 50 to 100-year drought that is less than half of the normal rainfall that you might experience.
You were talking just before we got on the air about cycles within wine grapes, mm-hmm. and things that are useful to know when you're figuring out what you're taking off the vine this year.
Sure.
An 18-month cycle, you said.
It's roughly about 18 months. What happens in any given growing year, for example, right now, the vine is setting itself up for next year. And this has to do with how buds are being set. And as the vine goes through that process, we are establishing next year's growth right now and so on and so forth. And so if we look back, we have this about 18-month window. The last really impactful thing that happened within Oregon was our December freeze last year, December 7th, 8th, right around that period, where we just went into a cold snap. And the vines were not completely hardened off, ready for winter when that happened. And there are some places we got down to the coldest temperatures we've seen since the 1990s. Some places got down to -4, -5, -6. And that's right at the limit for some varieties being damaged, meaning that the primary buds for this growing season were damaged last December. And some people had some impacts. It would reduce the crop load for some varieties. And depending on how the site was oriented, some sites are more prone to really cold air versus others.
So the issue is not how cold it got, but how fast it got that cold?
Well, it's a little complicated. So the issue comes down to is the vine hardens off into the winter. So it's getting ready for dormancy. And if that dormancy period is sufficient so that it can be hard by the time it gets really cold, then you don't have as much damage from really cold winter temperatures. But what ended up happening last year was two different things. We didn't harden off really quickly from the end of October through December. Plus, it got down colder than we would have expected.
All right, so fast, cold, and colder than usual. Mm-hmm. Right. Tell us a bit, if you would, about the growth of the wine industry in the Rogue Valley in particular, because I understand that you had at least some hand in this in letting people know this is a good place to grow wine.
Well, I'm not sure I had a hand in it other than just looking at the data and providing information to help people see what's going on. You know, most of the growth of this industry comes from the fact that people are growing a good crop and making a good product, and others see that and then come here. But, we needed to kind of, I would say, collect baseline information to help the industry understand kind of what was happening relative to growth and potential. And the industry really has grown tremendously. When I came here, we were talking in Southern Oregon, Douglas, Jackson, Josephine County. In our region here, we may have only had about 15 to 20 wineries, and now we've exploded to where we're getting close to 100 producers within the area and about 300 to 325 vineyards. And so the industry has really exploded, and there's plenty of growth still to come, I think.
What's the cycle? I mean, we talked about the 18 months of, what happens then and what you get off the vine now, how long does it take for a vine to begin producing grapes that are good enough for wine?
Well, it depends. Most of the time people will say 3 to 5 years. You can often get a crop off of a second year vine. It's typically not a lot, but it's something that you can kind of play with and see kind of what your site can give you. But 3 to 5 years is pretty typical. It just depends on the variety and the site, the soil and the climate that's there.
Which must make some interesting choices then for the people running vineyards, because for a couple of years they're not going to have any income from it.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to amortize that out so that you understand kind of what your investment is in terms of planting and where your returns will occur in the future.
Greg Jones is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a climatologist at Southern Oregon University who's been focusing on the wine industry most of his career. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the crop and the pretty good crop it appears to be on the Oregon side of the line. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Check us out on Facebook as well. So let's talk. You mentioned that, for example, in California, quantity might be down 10 to 15%, but quality is still pretty good. What are the usual measures of quality here, and how can you know when you're just getting the grapes off now?
Well, quality is very subjective within wine grapes. I mean, if you went to the fruit, you could look at levels of sugar, acid, or the balance between the two, flavor and aroma development. So those are characteristics of the fruit, and there's been many attempts to try to standardize that to look at quality, but every grower might have a slightly different point that they're looking for in the fruit characteristics to make a given wine. And so fruit, it often isn't the best measure. When we get to the wine side of things, then it even becomes more complicated because wine is a very subjective beverage. And so having somebody say that this is good relative to another is really difficult. And most of the time this happens through rating systems where magazines or wine writers will write about a region or a wine and give it a score. And then, people follow it or they don't.
Given what's happening in the Rogue Valley in particular, I mean, is this a place that's come up and up in esteem for its wines over the years?
Well, I think we have. We have a huge diversity and potential in terms of what we can grow here because the climates are not one-dimensional. For example, the Willamette Valley is a cool climate region and tends to be more limited in the number of varieties it can grow. But when you come to the Rogue Valley, you're in a place where you have a tremendous diversity of potential. And so we've started understanding that potential and capturing it. And I think growers are raising the bar, producing better fruit, which produces better wine. It takes time to get recognized, that's for sure, because we're a regional, kind of somewhat geographically isolated region. And so for us to get recognized and have people come here, it's a process that has to happen over time. Places like Napa, they have a big metropolitan area in their backyard. And so it doesn't take quite as long. Even if they weren't producing good wine, they would still probably grow.
So let's talk about what happens with climate as you go off into the future then. I mean, mm-hmm. you've been very active in this field. You write portions of things like reports from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. So from what you have seen thus far and can extrapolate, I mean, are we talking about potential changes in the wine industry on both sides of the state line, the kinds of things they grow, the kinds of wines they produce?
Well, I mean, I think that this is pretty much given with what we know about history. Climate should never expect to be the same. They're always changing. And if you look back, you know, we go through glacier periods and then moving into warmer periods. And we're in a place today where human input into that system is definitely changed the game to some degree. And so when we look at that, we have to think about how grapes have been historically grown in certain areas versus how they're being grown today and potentially in the future. For example, the Willamette Valley in the 1940s through the 60s probably was right at the limit of even being able to grow wine grapes.
Really? Too far north?
It was too far north, and mm-hmm. at that time it was too cold and too wet. And the climates have gotten more conducive to ripening over time. Instead of having a 1 in 10 years good vintage, now it's 8, 9, 10. You know, and this has happened many places in the world. So the idea there is that we're ripening fruit in a different climate today. And if the climates continue to warm at the same rate, the issue becomes is it the right variety for that region, or do we have to deal with some kind of management change in the vineyard to help produce balanced fruit, or is it some combination of plant vineyard management and winery processing that manages or adapts to climate change in the future?
You mentioned the rate, and I guess that's the big question, because you mentioned climate change does mm-hmm. happen, lots of historical records to indicate that. I mean, lots of records within geology and every mm-hmm. place else. But is it changing faster? I mean, are we going through a faster change because of the human-caused part?
Well, that's what most scientists tend to think. The evidence is pointing to us having a much more rapid rate of change than we've had historically. The issue there is that it's hard for human systems today. As we've developed over our short history, we basically have fixed systems today that don't change very easy. And so if we need to adapt across changing climates in the future, it becomes a more difficult issue.
Well, you've obviously studied wine in several parts of the world. Is the situation the same everywhere? I mean, are they all having to consider, well, you know, we have to, you know, maybe we'll grow something else in the future?
Yeah, it's definitely occurred pretty much everywhere throughout the world. There are no wine regions that I've seen anywhere worldwide that have cooled and are growing cooler climate crops. Most places are looking at how to manage within a warmer system. Australia has had prolonged drought and has had some of the warmest temperatures on the planet, and they have issues with salinity in the soil and heat stress during the day. And they're looking at ways in which they can manage that system better. It's not easy, but their adaption is capable. Many other places in Europe and other places are also having similar issues.
Do you get to a point eventually in some places where it just is too costly to produce more?
Well, it really depends on kind of what you're doing. If you're growing, if you've been a cool climate zone and it warms, then you naturally are going to be able to grow warmer climate varieties, and you have a greater range of potential adaptation. But if you've been at the upper limit of warm to hot climate suitability for wine grapes, and it warms a little bit, you're outside the range of what we know today. Which means, you know, that it becomes completely unsuitable, or maybe we have to adapt in ways that we don't know about yet.
We have a couple of listener emails for you. Boyd in Wolf Creek wants to know if viticulture climate focus translates into useful knowledge for supporting healthy native ecosystems.
Well, it does. I think we've used viticulture and wine production as kind of the canary in the coal mine, being able to kind of measure and document kind of how climate change produces impacts. We have better data in our managed systems than we do in our natural systems. But when you look at them in combination, we know that there's been changes. Plants and animals and insects are showing changes in terms of climate there. I was just reading in your Jefferson Exchange magazine this morning about the white bark pine, and, you know, going through something similar. Cold mountain environments where they do the best, and those are being pushed upward in elevation. And so we can have impacts to ecosystems as well as we can manage crops.
Which raises the question, I mean, can you draw lines on maps now and say, okay, this is the good zone for Pinot, this is the good zone for Malbec, et cetera, and are those zones moving, and if so, how fast?
Yeah, this can be done for really any crop or really any native species, too, to any region. So you could say these are the ideal growing conditions that occur, where they've been historically, where they are today, and where they potentially would be in the future. And typically what one would do is they would look to see how those have shifted both, you know, horizontally across the landscape and also vertically in terms of elevation.
Another email, a little bit outside your expertise perhaps, but Grumpy John in Grants Pass wondering where harvest workers come from and where they might come from in the future.
Well, this is a real challenge. In the past 3 or 4 years, this has been the number one concern for producers throughout Washington, Oregon, and California. There's not a really good answer here. Trying to figure out kind of how we can get past this idea of a shortage of, in terms of workers. What we do know is that people that live here in the U.S. tend to not want the same jobs that immigrant workers coming from Mexico or other countries do. And this is not just unique in the United States. It happens in Australia with people from Indonesia. Huh. It happens in South Africa. It happens in Europe with Algerians and, you know, so on and so forth. So it's not unique. And so the movement of individuals to help harvest is going to be a real problem in the future. And if our political system tends to either allow it more or block it, is going to be a big deal for this industry.
The immigration and the wine industry certainly working together. Just quickly now, because we're almost out of time, of all the places you've seen, is there one sweet spot on the earth that's the best place for growing wine?
Or are there just lots of them? There's lots of them. And I'm not even sure they've all been found yet.
Oh, all right. another quest for Greg Jones. Dr. Greg Jones is a climatologist at Southern Oregon University, focusing on the wine industry. Thanks so much for joining us today in the exchange.
Thank you.